Liftoff! Hi everyone, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 124, and we're back after some crazy episodes, some weird techno babble shit going wrong, and
some I'm not your host, so Jonathan techno Metz. Babble problems.
That was James Jones you just heard. Yes. We also have Greg Lay from the UK John Lindemann, newly engaged John Lindemann.
Thank you, Johnny. It's good to be here.
Soon to be Mrs. Blank.
Lindemann.
Mrs. Lindemann, yes.
Soon to be. That just sounds like you should be 40.
No, actually, John, I mean, don't you live in Georgia? I thought that kind of marriage was illegal there.
What, a normal one? Oh, she's not my cousin.
She's not my cousin,
even though she is from down south. So maybe I should get that checked out.
Well, you're from up north, so yeah, but you're from up north, from the
way
up
north. he means
all right.
Yes,
that's not awkward at all.
No, this conversation didn't need to take it. Well done, Johnny.
I'm calling to keep up the trend so far with the episode. I'm calling this one Listener Mail Orgy. So take off your clothes and jump in. It's all about you, the listeners, this week, and we're going to catch up on a major. We've got a major backlog of letters. You guys have been, and girls have been, amazing sending in letters. We've gotten all kinds of really interesting letters, and we just. Because of the technical problems and like the special Ocarina of Time episode, which hopefully you all enjoyed, we just haven't been keeping up with my promise of doing three or four letters a week. So we're gonna do a double dose this week. That's all we're gonna do. We're gonna really focus on listener mail this week, and then going forward, we're gonna try to do some every episode. Now, the very next one, I'm not sure if we'll be able to squeeze it in because we're doing some kind of end of the.
We're gonna try to do some kind of end of the year. Except the next one.
That's the thing. We're doing some end of the year programming, and the schedule is getting a little cramped, and things are getting weird. I'm about to go out of town for like 3 weeks, so I'm not going to be around. I don't know if you guys are going to be able to, if you're going to go ahead and record without me. I hope you do. Hopefully, we're going to have a couple shows.
Unmitigated disaster, ahoy!
I think your hands are capable, hopefully, we'll have some guests. I always love listening to the shows that I'm not on because it's such a surprise. I get to be a listener for once, instead of just retreading my thought process, which I usually do when I listen to the ones that I am on. But anyway, I don't know exactly what's going to happen through the rest of this calendar year, but hopefully we are going to have a few more shows, and we're going to keep doing the listener mail in some way, and then we'll start a little fresh in January when I get back. So anyway, today's all about the listener mail, and we're just going to jump right into it, and Greg has the first letter.
I do. This is from the Fleece in New York City, and he says, "Hey guys, so right now WeSpeak only works with Animal Crossing City folk, but soon people start wondering about the other games it'll be featured in. I was wondering if you think Nintendo would enable WeSpeak for older games that have online play, like Mario Kart or Mario Strikers. I noticed that for Animal Crossing, WeSpeak only allowed up to 3 people to be connected. Do you think that's going to be the standard limit, or could we see a higher number in the future? Also, I took your advice and got Orbient. Thanks for mentioning a game I would have totally overlooked because of the massive bulk of WiiWare games being released. Keep up the good service, as I appreciate it."
We are happy to serve.
As far as being enabled in other games, I think it probably has to be in the game's code.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like something that probably could be patched,
but Nintendo hasn't really patched new functionality into a game.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, Wii doesn't have a hard drive, so it's difficult to do a kind of large-scale reworking of code in the way that you can on, say, the Xbox or the PlayStation. But the other thing is, a game like Mario Kart especially, the net code that they wrote for that, I'm sure is basically using up the entirety of the bandwidth.
Because it doesn't suck it on online play.
Right. So it's not just that, but I mean, certainly the Wii has the bandwidth to do online gameplay with voice chat,
Really?
Excuse me. The online.
It doesn't have
really
the bandwidth to do online combat in Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers.
That's because of shitty programming.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess what I'm saying is that even if they went back and wanted to add WeSpeak functionality for something like Mario Kart, it's not as easy as just tacking it on top of what's already there, because probably what they would have to do is make the code that was previously used a lot more efficient to free up more bandwidth
to use for that resources.
Voice chat stream. So I think it's totally feasible, but it's a lot of work, and I don't think they're going to do it.
Now, if it's just not worth it, another Mario Kart for Wii...
Then totally, yeah. Now,
I think the chances of another Mario Kart Wii are quite remote, considering how well it continues to sell. it's really got that long tail thing working very, very nicely. That's the thing. I mean, Smash Brothers and Mario Kart are the big online sort of competitive game from Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what else. I mean, I assume we would see stuff from third parties like the Conduit.
Smash Brothers Online is a relative statement.
It's Conduit's already talking about using
it. Conduit is going to have it.
Anything Nintendo announces,
like, yes, that's going in.
Yeah, that is true. It is confirmed for that. Yeah. But for Nintendo, maybe Mario Party, that, like, if you're up for that.
They haven't really done Mario Party. That would imply online gameplay for Mario Party.
Yeah,
I know.
Which would be a much more momentous thing than voice chat support.
Something strange is afoot in Mario Party land, because there wasn't a new one announced or released this year, which is a first in like the better part of a decade. Something strange is going on. Maybe they are doing something more ambitious.
Isn't it weird to have a year without Tony Hawk or Mario Party?
A year without a Tony Hawk.
But you did get Tony Hawk's Motion for DS, which apparently
is 1998, John. That was when it last happened.
Yeah.
Greg, I have a feeling not that many people will be getting Tony Hawk's Motion.
Yeah, I know.
But we shall see. I still don't know the first thing about it, except it comes with some tilt pack.
Yeah,
that's all I know about it. You know,
very good.
It's not by Vicarious Visions, so I'm pretty skeptical of its quality, because they have made every portable Tony Hawk game since 2001. So I think
at this point Tony Hawk is just making sure that his kids get through college. Just so that, you know, because he knows, like,
they go into Harvard and Yale at the same time.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, he had his decade-long run, but I don't think people care about Tony Hawk games anymore.
Well, skateboarding kind of is cyclical, too, in its popularity. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to take that into account as well. I think a 10-year run is really good for skateboarding.
Yeah.
Well, I have no comment on that. But, as far as other games that will use WeSpeak, the only one that's confirmed is The Conduit.
Right.
And that is coming out in February or March from Sega.
Yes.
And beyond that, we don't know. But in terms of what's coming out next year, I think Punch-Out, if it has online play, is a very likely candidate. I think Boom Blocks 2, we don't know if it's coming out next year or maybe 2010, but I think Boom Blocks 2 seems like the kind of game that might push out in that direction.
Yeah.
Now, Boom Blocks 2.
Oh, God, I know where this is going.
I'm really curious, though. Like, how much have they really said about it with regards to online play?
They haven't said anything about it, period, except that we know it exists. And that alone is exciting for me, because I love the first one. So I'm very excited that they're making it.
And you're the
sequel.
Only one? Oh!
Supposedly it's one of those games that sort of sold under the radar, but it actually sold surprisingly well. So it just never hit the top 10.
The week I took off, I did see somebody spend like 20 minutes trying to figure out what the game was by looking at the box.
She's
standing in the aisle of Target, like flipping it around, looking at it, all confused.
It's apparently as like one of those sort of low level long tail kind of things, you know, where it's sort of
it's not a slow burn like carnival games, but what is
that's
more of a crazy long term burn. It never was slow. I mean, Carnival Games was a top seller from the beginning, really.
And it's very budget these days, I think, especially in Europe. It keeps appearing in the top 20, because it's just like cheap at this point as well.
You mean Carnival Games?
It is pretty cheap.
I mean, because it costs basically nothing to make. I mean, look at it.
Boom Blocks has great word of mouth, and from what I've heard, it actually has sold pretty well. And so I'm very glad to hear they're making a sequel. Anyway, I didn't mean to get into this whole tangent. I was just saying that seems like a good candidate for me. Yeah, but we know so little about what Nintendo is doing next year that And they're certainly going to be leading the way with this kind of peripheral just because they made it and they have the most advanced knowledge of it. So once we know more about what their 2009 lineup is going to be, maybe Excite Truck 2. We just had some news about Monster Games, the developer of the first one, having some kind of secret Wii project.
Yeah, but
that game is dying for online play, and Wii Speak support would be a wonderful addition.
But they did quite knowingly not say it was Excite Truck.
No, because they can't, James. I mean, this is Nintendo's corporate policy.
I know,
the developer
but
can't
it's very,
say a
very
fucking thing about the game
for
until Nintendo says
like,
it's okay.
Yes, we're making a game. Well, duh, what else would you be
doing?
Well,
it wasn't that. So the information was more sort of grapeviney than that as well. It wasn't
like a declarative sort of thing.
It was very much like, oh, you know, something's going on there and it's been going on for 2 years, so I presume that's...
Is that we know it's not Excite Truck?
Well, it's the last one, so...
It's
could
the
well
same
be.
Level as like when ATI makes these... you know, offhand statements in interviews with Forbes or whatever, that they've got an ongoing contract with Nintendo to develop advanced hardware. Yeah, we know ATI is working on the successor to Wii, but we don't know what it is, and they're obviously not going to tell us. They're waiting for Nintendo. I mean, they're under a contract, and they can't talk about it. And that's it's that way for any developer who works with Nintendo. They can't talk about it. And
I think the only other two, I think in terms of the potential Wii Speak applications, obviously that aren't just like so you can enjoy sort of like, you know, chatting, but sort of more gameplay wise, you've got like Endless Ocean 2. That could use, you know, like more co-op exploration stuff. It could use with the communication. And also, if you're really hoping, Pikmin co-op online voice chat, that would be lovely. If you're really hoping.
And you're not talking about play on Wii Pikmin. No, I'm not about that.
Well, that would be one way. We've talked about the fact that the port of the original Pikmin with Wii controls puts pressure on the new one to be more different. Online co-op with, you know, Wii Speak integration would be one way in which it would be thoroughly differentiated. So it's probably asking a lot, maybe, from Nintendo, but that would be very nice application if it came to bear.
Yeah.
Well, now, I mean, I'll be really interested to see exactly what the Conduit does with it, because I'd like to see what somebody does with it who is not Nintendo. Somebody who has no agenda, who is basically just trying to exploit the hardware as much as they can, like, you know, like something like Vicarious Visions does.
But you know, they're trying to do so much in that in that game that I'm not sure they're going to really try to experiment too much with a
But
microphone.
That's the thing. I'm saying that they'll do more than Nintendo would. Nintendo would pretty much play it safe. Yeah.
Possibly,
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're being very ambitious with the Conduit, and we've talked about this before, but High Voltage really does not have a pedigree worth
Well,
no.
they don't, but
well,
I mean,
they do have a pedigree.
I don't know that they have a good pedigree. I don't know that they've ever made an online game, really. I mean, most of their stuff is like licensed games for PS2 and things like that. So and DS, and so I'm not really sure that they have any experience making online games. Hopefully, they've hired experts, but we still don't. You know, they actually haven't really talked about multiplayer for the Conduit.
Yeah.
Most of the interviews and the leaks to IGN and crap like that has all been about single player, and we know it has some kind of split screen deathmatch with online, and then they announced Wii Speak as soon as that was announced, and it even has Wii Motion Plus support, even though we have no idea what that could possibly add to the game or how they're going to be using that. It comes out almost the same time.
Well, what intrigues me about the Conduit is the fact that it's not a game that Nintendo itself would make, typically.
No,
you're not going to see them make a straightforward first-person shooter. So it'll
it's
be
a little
to
more
see
back
to
the age of GoldenEye, you know, which Nintendo published, but Rare made it, of course. And and I think that's why people are excited about it, because they think, you know, like, maybe we could have... I mean, back 10 years ago, it wasn't unusual to think of a Nintendo system as being a good system for first-person shooters.
No, in fact, it was the system for first-person shooters.
It was the system for a while, and now it's not. And so I think people look at the Conduit, and they think about the glory days of GoldenEye, and they think maybe this is, you know, this is kind of bringing back that age. And I hope it does.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway,
I'm just saying there are things that will be tried on the Conduit that would not be tried if Nintendo was anything Nintendo will do with Wii Speak. So
I just don't think that they'll really experiment too much
with Wii Speak, because they're just busy experimenting with so much else.
I think the conduit's going to try a lot of things, and some of them won't work. But at least they're trying.
Yeah, which is better than anyone else.
They're definitely taking the throw everything at the wall and see what sticks approach.
Yeah, which isn't bad. I mean, if you think about it, there have been games that did that on the Wii already. I mean, and let's say the DS, for example, what was the name of that game? The Sega game that launched with the DS.
Feel the Magic?
Yeah, it really just tried basically to do everything on the DS and see what worked.
I think that was more of a like a Rayman Raving Rabbids kind of experiment. Yeah, I mean, they were trying to use all the different features, but you could say that for a lot of DS games, and most of them didn't work very well.
Yeah, but it was like a launch game that really showed you can do this, this, and this, but this doesn't work.
Right. It was a gimmick game. It was, you know, we don't actually know how to design a game for this new system yet, so we're just going to try to exploit the hardware. And the Conduit is not that because it's not a launch game. I mean, they've obviously had time to work with the hardware and see what games are being released.
It is experimenting with things that haven't been done on the Wii before and using new pieces of hardware that are coming out for the Wii or really trying to push the online capability of the Wii. Mm-hmm. And trying to push a genre on the Wii and push the graphics engine on the Wii. I mean, there's a lot of things they're going out in front on here.
Yep.
Yeah, I have a feeling that not all of it's going to work very well. But I commend them for trying, and I hope it will move things forward in some way. Anyway, I've been trying to get back to the other part of the question, the other part of the question being about how Animal Crossing only allows up to 3 people to be connected. I had not heard that, but I think it's interesting considering that Animal Crossing supports up to 4 players being connected online.
Do you think he means 3 other people, though?
Oh, maybe that's what I mean, 3 other people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
obviously.
I would assume they would build in the Wii Speak support for the maximum with the
Wii Speak channel, which is the only other thing that is going to use it in sort of near term, that connects, you know, 4 in total, 3 others to you. So
right,
one would think it's just the same across the board.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Well, I mean, maybe that's just a convenient, easy number to do, but the Conduit supposedly supports up to 16 players online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not so much a technical limitation as if you get more than 4 of these things synced up, it just becomes a cacophony, especially if you have multiple people at each system trying to talk. I mean,
yeah, that could be
feasibly. You could have an unlimited number of people talking over Wii Speak. It just depends on how many people you can cram in front of the microphone, right?
Yeah.
So maybe it's just that beyond 4 microphones, it just gets a little messy and you can't understand it very well.
Yeah, so you could do it, but whether it's advisable or not is kind of another matter.
Right. You know, I think one game that really should be using Wii Speak and apparently isn't is this new Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, the one that's on Wii and DS.
Echoes of
that
Time.
That really should be using it. When's that coming out?
Well, we don't know. It was just announced this week that it is coming to North America, but we don't know when. And, I mean, I don't know if the Japanese version is going to have it, but it seems like something they might want to think about including in the U.S. version, or else it seems like if it doesn't have voice chat, and it could because of the time it's released, they're going to get a lot of criticism for it. So it seems like if the game is primarily an online experience, and that seems to be the case, it should probably have some kind of voice chat, you know, especially I know it's cross-compatible with DS, and maybe, you know, for whatever reason the DS, they couldn't fit it in the bandwidth to do online, to do voice chat, and so you only have Scribble chat.
But there are DS games with voice chat.
Of course there are.
No,
yeah,
but in the context
of
that game,
it's a game, it's a game by game basis. I mean, I know that, you know, it depends on what kind of data you're passing back and forth.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The way that game should work in a perfect world is that the DS version and the Wii version should both have voice chat, and since you can play the game between versions, you should be able to voice chat between versions. And I don't see why that's not reasonable, you know, but I'm sure it would be an interesting development challenge, and maybe they're just not going to bother with it. Anyway, we should move on, but thanks to the Fleece for a really interesting question. Obviously, it got us a little riled up, and John is next.
All right, the next one, Armac from Toronto writes, "Hey guys, I was just wondering, whatever happened to the community segment of the podcast, James? It seems like that section only really existed for a few shows, and then it kind of got combined with listener mail and then axed completely. At any rate, I enjoyed hearing what you guys thought about the things that we talked about on the forums. Bring this back if at all possible."
Mm.
Well, what happened is I no longer am community manager.
Yeah, that's right. James is interim community manager, right?
I was interim community manager for like 6 months.
Who is community manager now, James?
We do not have one.
We don't have one, but I'm pretty sure that Mike Gammon is going to be doing that.
Yeah. Now, James tried to elect me, which some of our
I thought you should be hilarious.
That was a joke.
Yeah.
actually, if we had had nominations, I was going to nominate John for the position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had actually already talked with Wendy and tried to convince him that John's actually very popular and has his finger on the pulse there.
Yeah.
Because I know he wouldn't know better, so I figured if we told him that, he'd believe it. And then we'd have all sorts of fun.
Yeah.
But
I think that bringing the community, bringing the forum pulse or whatever we were going to call it into the podcast, we never figured out a way to make it work. And the other part is that our schedule for the show kind of became more and more bloated, and the episodes got longer,
yes.
And it became hard to fit it in with everything else we wanted to do, and so it's very tricky introducing a new regular feature into the show, because you either the show gets considerably longer on a consistent basis, or you have to cut down on something else,
Everything that we've been doing is all meat, isn't it? You know, there's nothing to trim off.
I'll say one thing though, and another reason we sort of ditched it was because there were plans at one time, albeit not really well believed, that there was going to be a community-based podcast.
Yeah, this was another factor. Yeah,
that's somewhat predictably sank beneath the waves of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why. Who was in charge of that again?
Oh, God, I can't remember. Oh, wait. Ty was in charge of that.
There you go.
Yeah. No, it was a cool idea.
And the one that got released was really funny.
It was good, yeah. I mean, maybe the incoming community manager, whoever that may be, will try to revive that. I would love to see something like that, or to hear something like that. If you're involved with the forums, the chat room, whatnot, you're interested in that kind of thing, then my suggestion to you would be talk to not just us, but maybe to some of the staff members who are very involved in the forums, and talk to them about, maybe some ideas for doing that kind of thing, and take the initiative and make your own and see what flies and, be proactive, and I think that'll help a lot. But I don't know. It is definitely possible in the future that we might bring something like that back to this show. But right now, we don't have any plans to do that. All right, James, you are next.
All right. So Voodoo from Chicago writes, "What's your vote for the best shoot 'em up currently available on the VC, gentlemen? All at once."
Lords of Thunder!
Bullshit! Oh, he whiffed!
My bad.
He whiffed!
Lords of Thunder!
Oh my God, I can't believe you whiffed on that.
John, you're edited out of the podcast again.
I'm just speaking from the heart, guys. I'm speaking from the heart.
Failure! Yeah, failure!
I guess you can't punish him for being so genuine.
John, are you sure it's your heart that you're speaking from? I don't know if I even have a suggestion. Mm. I've got several, but
there's a lot of good ones.
A lot of them are kind of mediocre.
I've got two, and they both have the word thunder in them.
Yeah,
Axelay also.
Yeah, Axelay's good. Yeah, Axelay's good. Grady's too.
I think
very good.
Fantasy Zone is really weird. If you want something that's very different in terms of gameplay,
yes.
Not just graphics, but gameplay. If you want something that plays very differently from all the other ones, then Fantasy Zone is pretty strange and not bad.
And of course, you've got the sort of difference. Some of it will depend on the kind of shoot 'em up you like, because there are differences in terms of like the vertical ones like Soldier Blade. and stuff like that, where
it's
kind of more pure blasting, whereas like some other ones like are more like about sort of the environments a little more and stuff. And obviously you've got the sort of pure one hit kill ones where it's sort of like Lords of Thunder, you're having a health bar and things like that. So there's little some of it is about which type you might like best rather than just which is purely the best.
Right, and I would say that there's quite a few good ones out there. And
oh, yeah, it was one of the best represented genres on the Virtual Console.
It's an over-represented genre on the Virtual Console.
By a country mile, you know, I mean, just because of Hudson, if nothing else, let alone, you know, everyone else.
Yeah, seriously, the weekly TG16 shooters that we had going for a while.
Yeah, yeah, they're still coming
every
now.
They've really slowed down now.
Yeah, they've kind of released most of them. We're still waiting for Gynorg of Phallic Boss fame. Well, you are anyway.
Look, I already have something that I would call the phallic boss thing, so it's okay. I don't need game reinforcing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's also Star Soldier R for WiiWare. Yeah, yeah. So even beyond Virtual Console,
if you want a game that lasts 10 minutes,
yeah, Score Attack.
Well, sure. Yeah, it's not the best value, probably, but if you want something with nicer graphics...
Well, it's fundamentally different from the other shooters, and like, it's not level by level, or like, you know, it's just pure like it's pure scores, so it's kind of like, you know, like Yoshi Touch and Go or something.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, we also have Gradius 3 is out
Gradius
there.
Gradius 3 and Gradius 2 are both very good. They're quite similar. Gradius 2 runs smoother.
Gradius 3, but it has crazy slowdown, and it was that way on the original Super Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly.
It just ran like shit, and that's just kind of the way it was.
Few,
and I think that's
there's a few good ones we haven't got, like UN Squadron. Is very good.
Yeah,
and
I love UN Squadron.
So that's one of the big
that
ones
is a great
from the
16B.
And obviously, there's some we'll never get, like Radiant Silver Gun. But you know, there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
Sure, and of course, you know, you've also got Ikaruga for GameCube. That
I'm
not sure if you'd want to call this a shooter or not, but Sin and Punishment.
Yeah, if you're that and Star Fox, if you want to kind of extend it out that way.
Star Fox 64.
Yeah. They're both pretty.
Yeah, I mean, those are
excellent.
Different kinds of shooters, but I think they are. Definitely in the shoot 'em up genre, they're just sort of more modern takes on the genre.
No, absolutely.
You know, they're a little
relatively speaking,
they're a little off, they're a little different, a little weirder. But I think those are definitely. I think they definitely have the heart of a shoot 'em up.
Yep.
Oh yeah, definitely. So.
Okay, well, I think we answered that question pretty thoroughly. So the next question is from Chaz HD from Virginia, and he writes, "Hey guys, I'm not sure how you feel about this, but I consider myself a short burst gamer. What I mean by that is that I'm a gamer who has a busy life and doesn't have the hours to devote myself to gaming. I usually have 20 to 40 minutes at a time to game. What do you suggest I play? I like old school games myself, and I like old school games and usually play by myself."
Yeah. Well, I suppose virtual console games are a good bet, because obviously with the suspend feature, you can just play for about 20 minutes, you know, press the Wii menu button and be done if you like old school, because there's not that much old school on the Wii right now.
Well, I mean, even some WiiWare games too, like Tetris Party is great for that kind of just jumping in. I mean, if you like puzzle games, it's awesome to just jump in.
Yeah, another WiiWare
one. Against somebody.
Another WiiWare, well, I guess, Alien Crush Returns, the pinball, that, you know, you could have a sort of fairly brief time with that, or any of the ones that are on the TG16 virtual console, you know, Alien Crush, the original, and all that. Also, DS, obviously, is always good. You know, you've got, this was a really good year for old school games on the DS.
Like
Space Invaders
Extreme,
exactly. Yeah, I know you can just close it up whenever you like, you know, and come back to it later. So that's a pretty good bet, I'd say.
Yeah, on the Wii, I would go back to Boom Blocks. It's not necessarily old school, but
definitely
bite-sized. A game that you can play for.
Bite-sized.
Yeah, it's a game that you can play for a very short period if you want to. It's not a big time commitment. It's addicting. Yeah. It's kind of hard to put down. But the game is split up into very small.
And we couldn't let this conversation go without mentioning Geometry Wars Galaxies again.
Yes,
again, might be difficult to stop at 20 or 40 minutes if you really get into it, but it's theoretically possible that you could only play
right.
I think also Greg will agree with me with Pinball Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah, so again, you're great, really good, totally, you know, viable to play that for just a little while or longer, but I guess the point he's making is that, you know, it's these games that you have to invest a lot of time in that he's, you know, that he's avoiding, so... It's not to say that the games we're talking about you can only play for 20 to 40 minutes, but it's certainly, you know, that's a viable option with them.
Yeah, I mean, like with Galaxies, Geometry Wars Galaxies, a typical game of that lasts less than 5 minutes. Now, you might play 20 games of it in a row, as I do usually, but if you can make yourself stop between sessions, you can play it for basically as little time as you want. And actually, I was walking through Circuit City today and saw that they're selling Galaxies for under $20 now, which is an amazing deal. If you haven't followed our advice yet, now would be a really good time to go pick it up, and make sure you have a classic controller, by the way.
I think it's advisable.
All right, so Greg, you have the next
question. I've got the next one. This is from Austin, and he says, "Dear RFN, here's my two cents about the DS Fat versus DS Lite debate. I still own a DS Fat. I've never purchased a DS Lite. I prefer the feel of its D-pad over the DS Lite's D-pad. I've tried using one multiple times, but each time I'm more frustrated by its inability to do what I want it to do. This is especially evident in 3D games when trying to move diagonally. I'm perfectly satisfied with my DS Fat. I have no plans to pay $130 to get a bright screen and the ability to have my GBA game stick out of the bottom of my DS. By that same token, the DSi doesn't have enough new features to warrant a purchase from me." So there you go. That's another one in James' column. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the DSi has plenty of new features. I just think most of them are silly.
It's all about digital distribution.
That's the only thing that I would actually care about.
Now, the one thing I will say with the Fat versus the Lite, I remember when I first got my DS Lite, I was like, oh my god, the screen is so much better.
It is significantly better, like shockingly.
No, I mean, I had a Fat for a long time. I actually didn't. I've had my DS Lite for less than a year. So, you know, I was somebody that didn't jump on it straight away, because I got my DS quite late. It was like in 2005, so it'd been like a year, and there was a new one. And I was like, not after just 1 year. But once I felt, and you know, friends had DS Lites and things, and the improvement was pretty obvious to me. And then when I finally did it, the D pad. I don't know. I wasn't all that happy with the clicky GBA SP thing of the DS. Were you? I don't know. I didn't like it that much.
No. I found it gave me blisters on my thumb. It has those raised tips at the end of each direction.
Yes, I've noticed that.
And the way that it clicks, there's really not any give to it. You're either not pushing it or pushing it pretty hard. And so that with the raised little edge there, it kind of rubbed on my thumb
If you were playing a game like an old side scroller style, like say for instance a Castlevania classic NES or one of the new Castlevanias even, where you're quite constantly pushing to the one side just to make your character continue to go, I'd find over time it would, you know, if you're having to hold down the D-pad on that, it would sort of get to your thumb a bit. It's a bit more forgiving, the DS Lite one.
There's some give, and it's not like you have to push hard for the motion to register, but if you want to keep pushing hard you can, but you can also play lightly on it. It's very, very much softer, and I don't know, I find the DS Lite D-pad to be much more comfortable, but it's definitely quite different.
I guess the difference he's talking about is the fact that maybe because it's a bit more sort of less sort of specific, less discreet, that maybe he finds the diagonals are not quite as, you know, tight on them, is what he's talking about.
I'm just wondering which 3D games he's playing with the D-pad.
Maybe if you're like playing Metroid Prime Hunters and movement is with the, you know, like you're looking, but then you're moving with the D-pad, maybe.
Yeah, but who's still playing Hunters, really? I mean, I'm playing Call of Duty World at War right now on my DS for review, and I'm not having any trouble moving diagonally, that's for sure. I'm having trouble with a couple other things like cramps because you play the same way you play Hunters, but I haven't had any trouble with the D-pad, you know. But most 3D games you would play with the stylus more likely, unless you're playing like Mario 64, but I haven't touched that in ages. So, I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely a matter of personal preference, and I don't know much about the DSi D-pad. I don't know if it's more like the fat one or the light one.
Yeah, apparently it is somewhat different, but I'm guessing it must be still pretty similar, considering how similar the system is overall to the DS Lite.
Yeah. It probably is more like the light D-pad, but I don't know that for sure. And as far as the so-called ability to have your GBA game stick out of the bottom of your DS, I've never really had an issue with that, just because, I mean, I don't play that many GBA games on my DS. I play mostly DS games.
Yeah.
Especially by the time the Lite came out, you know, I mean, I did play some GBA games on my DS Fat because the launch lineup wasn't that great, etc.
And there were still good GBA games coming out.
Yeah, and they're not anymore. So, I mean, unless you play a lot of GBA games on your DS, I don't really think that's an issue very much. And even when you do want to, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I played through Metroid Zero Mission this summer on my Lite, and, you know, I didn't really have a problem with it sticking out the bottom. It's not a big deal.
It's like a little awkward, but I mean, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't look nice, but just take it back out before you stick the DS back in your pocket or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. I have a carrying case where I keep games in, and DS in the case. Well, I lost it with my old DS, which I found.
Yes, you did.
I found both of them. I haven't said this
DS
on the show.
DS update! Johnny has found
his
DS.
That's right. I didn't lose them. I just didn't know where they were for a brief period of time.
That's the thing. If you lose something and then you find it again, it was actually just misplaced.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right.
Well, think about it, man. It's not lost. He found it.
Apparently,
it's not lost.
Apparently, at the end of the last ski season, I was probably riding with a friend back from the ski resort.
On a helicopter.
And shoved a DS. I had brought a DS case with me to play in the car.
To his island abode.
Exactly.
And I had shoved it into my ski boot. And so, you know, a couple weeks later when I wanted to play it, I forgot that I had put it in my boot, and you couldn't see it because the carrying case I have is black and the liner of my boot is very dark, and so it blended in, and I couldn't see down in there to see it, and I didn't even think of looking in the boot, of course, for my DS.
Well, who would?
And so, exactly. And so,
I mean, who would put their DS in a boot?
Apparently I would, although I don't remember doing that. So anyway... So I just couldn't find it. I looked everywhere and couldn't find it. And then last week, I went skiing for the first time this new ski season.
Ow, what the hell is this in my boot?
Exactly. Well, the funny thing was, we're actually at the ski resort in the parking lot. I'm standing in snow, you know, and about to put my boots on. And I noticed this DS case sticking in there, and I asked my friend, like, did you stick this in here? Why did you bring this? Because I thought it was my new DS Lite, you know, because the case is the same. I have a new case, but it's exactly the same kind. So I open it up, and I realize this is the one that I lost. And I was like, holy shit, this is like finding $200 in my ski boot. It's like Christmas. I couldn't believe
you got, so you had some really big time games in there, right, as well? It wasn't just
console. Tons, yeah. So I'm just really excited. I found, you know, new Super Mario Brothers and My French Coach and a whole
my
bunch
French
of other
Coach.
Shit I wanted. Shut the fuck up.
Breaking news!
You reviewed Johnny finds My French Coach. He liked it a lot. Now, you can argue with the content of the review, but you can't argue that he liked it. And therefore, it'd be nice
it just
for
seems
him
like it's an odd
it.
Game to put on, put like number two on his list of excited things he found.
It's just the next thing I thought of, but there were a lot of games in
My
there
French
that
Coach.
I really wanted.
Yeah, that's the problem. If there's ever a situation where there's some sort of ancient god that's going to come in a form that you specify, if Johnny's around, it's going to be a giant copy of My French Coach.
here's
the
amazing thing.
Marshmallow
From
Man.
Now on, when Johnny misplaces anything during ski season, he's gonna go look in his boot to see if it's there.
Oh, I am.
The
whole I'm gonna
thing,
be OCD
the whole
about
the story
it.
Is
for sure.
If you're ever on the run from the law, hide in a ski boot.
It'll take 6 months to find you.
There you go. So yeah, my old DS that I just found was all black. And I really like that color, so I think I'm going to go back to that one. And the replacement that I got, I'm just going to pass it on to another staff member who needs to upgrade from a fat one. So,
James,
I'm really excited. I have my favorite DS back, and I got
Bite
all my
me,
games that I thought were gone forever. So, Okay, the next question goes to John.
All right, Kevin Saturn Gadiani writes, you got to note that the DS Age of Empires sequel doesn't have
online. John, read that like he wrote it.
You got to note, the DS Age of Empires sequel doesn't have online. That's the best I can do for Cavs.
There you go.
That's pretty good.
Because that made me think you guys were talking about Age of Empires 3, and I'm sitting here thinking Age of Empires has had online play since 1997. Heck, most all PC games had some sort of easy-to-use online or network play, either by using a 9-pin serial cable, ooh, or by having one computer call another one, or even through the original M-Player, which was replaced by GameSpy far later on. Okay. Seems like consoles are still way behind, even though there's been online stuff out for ages. I guess since all PCs had modems for such a long time, this wasn't too out of whack. The closest thing to that these days is hooking up your cell phone via USB cable and initiating a data connection and essentially calling another computer that has the same kind of setup, LOL.
Is there a question?
Is there a question here? I guess the question is, why are consoles so behind, I guess?
Because
especially DS, because you know DS games have been online for years, and this winter they Majesco just released a new Age of Empires game for DS. It's the second one, and the last one came out 2 or 3 years ago, and I think people were okay with it not having online because of the time, the period in which it came out. But now that there's a new one and it's still turn based, it's not a real time strategy like the PC Age of Empires, it's still a turn based game and it has wireless multiplayer, I think it's a legitimate question to ask, why the fuck doesn't this have online play?
I like how it went from it's a legitimate question dropping an F-bomb in the middle of said legitimate question, thereby illegitimizing it for the entire rest of the context.
I was going to say, to put it in some sort of context, even Nintendo's turn based strategy games now have online, because Fire Emblem has got online, and
and it's a fucking
really?
NES.
Yeah, Shadow Dragon has online, and Advance Wars: Days of Ruin has online also. So if Nintendo's getting on the train,
I don't know why that really is. Behind. I mean, I don't know why there's so.
I can tell you why there's no online play in that game. They don't want to have to support the server play for it. That's the best.
Yeah, but there are all they need are matching servers, because the DS is hosting the game.
Because I just think they didn't want to bother with having to set up all the infrastructure for it.
I mean,
that much infrastructure.
But it still takes a
how many people are really going to buy this game? You need basically
that's
one
the point.
Server.
But that's the whole thing. Is it the lack of an audience? They perceive a lack of an audience?
They perceive that there's not going to sell enough to justify this. And
if you're
going to
say that, then why include multi-card wireless play?
Because
that's not trivial to program, okay? And in fact, wireless play is not vastly different than online wireless play.
Well, yes and no. You have to code the matchmaking system.
It doesn't require any external servers, I can tell you that.
But I think in terms of the value to the gamer, it's like, what are the odds of somebody else having another copy? You know, like,
I don't know. Ask Miami Knights. It had multi-card play.
Okay, here's the reason. I mean, I can tell you right now the real reason that companies do this, why they include multi-cart wireless play for games that you're probably never going to find another person that owns a copy, and they don't include online, because as we said, online costs a little extra to support because you need a matching server. And the other reason, the main reason that they include multi-card wireless play, is they think it's a marketing ploy to get people to encourage their friends to buy an extra copy.
Yeah.
They think it helps them sell more games. And it, honestly, in a game like Age of Empires, which is pretty... Age of Empires is pretty hardcore, okay? I mean, even especially the PC audience is very hardcore who plays this game. They're serious about it. But, you know, if you're going to buy a DS game, you're probably familiar a DS version of this game. You're probably familiar with the PC versions, which means you're probably accustomed to having online play, and it's probably a feature that you're sort of expecting to be there. And when it's not, that might actually discourage you from buying the DS version.
I think the average fan of the PC games isn't going to trifle with the DS version, because they're going to immediately assume it's going to be inferior in every respect.
Nah, you know, I don't necessarily agree. A lot of people bought Civilization Revolution.
But that game's not as hardcore.
Civilization isn't as hardcore as Age of Empires. Are you on crack? Are you high?
No, I always found that game easier to play than its counterpart.
Well, the thing is, I know guys that are pretty hardcore PC gamers who just kind of happen to have a DS and they got Age of Empires just because they like that game.
Mm.
Exactly. They're familiar with that. Is a PC franchise.
Yeah.
And when you put it on the DS, people are going to expect it to have similar features. I mean, as Kevin says here, as Saturn says, this series has had online play since 1997. That it doesn't have online play on the DS, which is probably more powerful than your PC was in 97,
it certainly
is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And the developers, there's just no excuse for it.
Well,
you
and you consider in the sort of marketplace, you know, in some ways it's competing with those Nintendo turn-based strategies. So also,
well, I don't know about that.
It's also competing with like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance 2, which also doesn't have online play.
That's
right. There's no excuse for
that. I'm not saying it's the only one that doesn't, but still, you know.
Well, you know, oh my god, I forgot what I was going to say. Luminous Arc 2, online play.
Awesome interjection.
Luminous Arc 2 has online play. There you
right,
go.
Right, okay.
There you go. I mean, I guess the point being, it's a crowded genre on the DS, and you have a lot of choices among turn-based grid-based strategy games. Some of them have online, some of them don't. If I was picking out of this half dozen games that came out this year in this genre, I'd probably go with something that had online.
Luminous Arc 2, enormous asses and boobs.
Never a bad thing.
Yeah,
they could just put that
I'll
on the
look
box.
Forward to reading that in the review, James.
It's not in there in the current version, but I have to edit anyway so I'm picking at it.
When you say the current version, you mean the blank screen.
I mean the one that John sent back to me. No. This is not a good review.
Okay, James, please read the next question.
All right, so Mario is French from Toronto writes, "Hey guys, in episode 120, 1 hour 11 minutes 36 second mark, Mr. Met states that, quote, as a reviewer, I don't care if the game is good or bad. I'm getting a review out of it either way. That's the important part. If my assignment is to write a review, I'm going to accomplish it good or bad. What I want to know is that did he just volunteer to review the next Pokemon Mystery Dungeon game? John, did he just volunteer to review the next Pokemon Mystery Dungeon game?
Well, you see, the way I dole those games out is I just you
people
know,
you
my
hate.
Who's on my shit list for the week? That's ultimately what it comes down to, you know.
Yeah, and I save your ass enough that I'm never going to be on your shit list.
Exactly. Actually, Johnny gets all of the Peach games. Really,
we've noticed that
games.
Actually,
and the occasional system, just in
Johnny's,
case.
Johnny's earned it. It's fine
for his boot DS. Yes,
it's all good.
I write my reviews in a timely fashion.
Yes, I write reviews in a timely fashion, with the exception of that SimCity Society that I guess is impossible to review.
Oh, yeah.
I can't review a game in our construct because we expect too much text for a game with too little content.
Wait. We don't have any kind of word limit minimum or anything like that. So I don't know what you're talking
about. There is an expectation that there be more than 30 words to review a game.
My man needs to write 1,000 words for a real joke, James. I don't want any excuses from you about it.
Yes, but that was more...
Yeah, but Greg, you are innately verbose.
Yeah.
Yes. You certainly don't need to write 1,000 words in a review. We don't have any such policy. Basically, our policy is you write as much as you need to, and hopefully not much more than that.
Which basically Greg proceeds to do every single time.
Well, I mean, Greg
it's as much as I need.
Greg needs to write more than some other people.
As much as
do.
I need to communicate my insights. About
Greg,
the game.
Greg is verbose. I can't deny it. I mean, I think of some of the things that, I mean, he can stretch something that should be said in 3 words out to 10. But it still sounds.
So what you're saying is
matter.
That you're sleeping on the job, then, John? Is that what you're saying?
No, absolutely not.
We know he is. But that's not the point.
It should be said. It should be said in 3 words. That you should edit it to 3 words. Either it should be or it shouldn't be. I mean, what's it going to be?
I'm not going to.
Oh damn! Here
so
it comes.
You basically just impeached yourself. So.
No, because beautiful. All of your stuff, everything you write is
going to be retroactively edited now.
Yes.
No, I think what John's trying to say is Greg's writing is so floral that we don't really want to edit it down because it's pleasant to read.
It is. It's very
pleasant.
It's
not rambling. It's not bloated.
To further hurt
this
aside,
lengthy.
I've noticed that if a game is really, really bad, I tend to get really, really verbose on it. If a game is good, I'll write more about it. But if a game is average, I'm like, oh my god, what am I going to say about this?
Yeah.
It's hard to review a 7. It really is.
So you're saying SimCity is a 7?
No, SimCity is like a 2. But that's beside the point.
Okay.
It's just so freaking boring. That game is impossible to review because I fall asleep playing it. Luminous Arc is hard to review because it's it's average in every respect except
you
for
just,
the giant M-sized breasts. And
did not care about that game at all. I mean, you pretty much just could have read like that entire review. Or you're just like, yeah, this is okay, but it's not really that good.
That's what it is.
This part of the game is meh.
That's how I felt about the game. This game's okay, but eh. And then I still have the giant review cartridge I need to send back after I get the final version of the review out. But I think, to get back to the question, yes, Johnny is reviewing the next Mystery Dungeon game.
Absolutely.
Settled.
Hell no. Hell no.
Because I think our Mystery Dungeon review was really long, too. But there were a lot of grievances to air.
Well, the whole thing with that is that you absolutely have to play the game to its full conclusion.
Yes.
That's part and parcel of reviewing one of those games.
But that's part you and parcel with how I review games. And it's like, I still feel bad that I didn't finish off the golf game. Mm-hmm. But it's physically impossible to beat all 99 holes of that dreck. I mean, it just can't be done.
You did review it, though, didn't you, James?
I did review it, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I played like
so
15 holes and said, my body can't take any more of this shit.
Get your money back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so bad.
Just stop, James.
It was so bad.
It seems like with the Mystery Dungeon games, there's something like miserably addictive about them. Like the reviewers just can't seem to stop after 10 hours, which I think would be more than
because
enough
you
for
think,
me.
You think, all
if
right,
I
this
were ever
can't
to review
go
such
on
a game,
any
which
longer.
I will not.
And then it goes on like 40 hours longer. And every time you get to the end, you're like, all right, this has to be the end. This is just going on way too long. The credits start playing, you're like, thank God. And then they tell you, part two. What the fuck just happened? What in the... Part two? Fuck you, game! Know, and then I start playing it.
I'll stick with Chrono Trigger.
Thanks. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny signed up for pretty much every single Dragon Quest in...
Can we put together a policy of if you review, three really peach games, you have to get one truly terrible game sent to you?
Just people sign up... See, that's the whole thing. I mean, Neil signs up for, every good game out there.
Yeah, I mean...
I swear to God. But people don't... People just don't sign up. I mean,
I sign up for games, but every time I get on, all that's left is Mystery Dungeon and God knows what else.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Well, I will say that I have reviewed many peachy games over the years here, and I've given out a lot of 9s and 10s, but if you think I don't ever review shitty games, I encourage you to sort by author on our reviews page, and I've had my fair share of them, buddy. I really, even when I was reviews editor and I basically just kept whatever I wanted to, I kept a lot
this
of shitty
mine.
Games because they
mine.
Needed to be reviewed, and... So I think the worst
type of way to review a game is when the game just doesn't matter. You know you're writing this review and no one's going to read it.
Yeah, that's most of my reviews.
Well, that's when you have to get creative and try to give people a reason. And, you know, it is really fun to get feedback on a review from a person who says, you know, I had no interest in this game or the review. I would never play it. But I enjoyed reading your review. Good work.
Yeah, I get. I have much interest in this game. I hated reading your review, and you have no idea what a roguelike's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is no worse feeling than putting a review out there and just seeing it sit there for 3 days with no reply.
That's what happened to my Dungeon Explorer. That was with Dungeon Explorer. Dungeon Explorer didn't get a single reply for 2 months. That was the most soul-crushing experience I've ever had on the site.
Yep.
Somebody finally bumped it, was like, wow, this is kind of sad. That was their bump for it. I was like...
We are very dependent on feedback.
I hate you people. I hate
We're
people
very
so much.
Needy.
I then went and banned about 7 community members just to vent my anger.
Smited them.
Okay
so part two
well,
of this
have...
question...
Okay, go ahead.
Well,
the real
this
question.
Is this is there's a lot of question here. Secondly, define hardcore gamer. Me. I got back into video gaming after not playing it for nearly 10 years, and when I listen to other gaming podcasts, it seems as if, quote, hardcore gamers, unquote, focus mostly on specific games that are geared towards adults. What happened to games geared towards people outside the 18 to 35 age bracket? Are they still considered games, right? Is it because they are focusing on what interests them and ignoring the rest of the games that without giving them a chance? Then it shouldn't be called hardcore, it's more like selective. What the dilly, yo. Thanks for answering these questions. Keep up the great work. So who wants to take point
who
on this?
Who wants to start there?
I feel like everybody's looking at me.
John, I think you're the most qualified.
It's a pretty amorphous term that's applied selectively.
It is an amorphous term. Well, the thing is, what I will say about the hardcore gamer debate is the fact that not only do I hate the term hardcore gamer, I also hate the people
hold on.
That hate what?
You hate the term hardcore gamer.
I totally do.
He's got an alternative. It's far better.
I don't hear why he hates it.
I don't. I hate the entire. It's like you have two camps. You have people that absolutely hate everything that they perceive to be part of the hardcore gamer ethos.
Okay.
And then you have people who hate everything that they perceive to be part of the non-hardcore gamer ethos.
Now define what you mean by the hardcore gamer ethos.
I suppose, probably the key thing is some sort of techno supremacism. You know, if it's going to be worth my while, it's got to be at the cutting edge of graphics, online interaction, all that. I guess that's the most commonly associated sort of.
Yeah, and it's either that or it's over the top antagonism towards perceived techno supremacism when sometimes it's not actually there.
People that hate HD. HD is the death of game of, you know, the game industry. HD this, HD that. That's bullshit, dude. Who gives a shit what TV you play your games on?
I do.
Who
fuck on your
cares?
TV, John.
Just because I like to
fuck
play
your TV,
HD,
John.
Who cares?
Nice. I played on a black and white set.
I played on a radio tube, bitch.
You know, and it's like, you know, there's some people that are like, as soon as you toss out stuff like, I like Gears of War 2. Gears of War 2, it's just the same as any other game that's out there. Whatever, it's just a hardcore gamer. All the hardcore gamers like it. Who cares, man?
Well, and obviously it's always a matter of perspective because, you know, from certain people's point of view that don't really pay much attention to games, they don't really care about them, the thought of somebody who spends a lot of time on gaming forums and following release dates and all that decrying other people being hardcore gamers, it would seem quite ludicrous because aren't they all hardcore gamers? You know, it's very much a matter of perspective. Like, you know, for some people, it might just be simply how much time you put into games, whether it be actually playing them or reading about them and listening to podcasts about them or whatever. So it would purely be that simple, that it's not like your preference in games or anything like that. It's literally just how much do you care about the medium in general, as in how much time you put in. So
see,
you can look at it a bunch of different ways.
It's totally an issue of semantics, which means it's just impossible to ever solve. It's like, you know, what is rock and roll? Like, it's like genres in a record store, right? Like, does this CD go in blues or jazz? Well, it could go either way because these terms don't really mean anything concrete. They're just kind of vague ideas, right?
It's like, what's
and
punk?
So that's why I don't like terms like this, but I think the best way to think about the term hardcore without getting your panties in a wad, without getting upset over other people using it, because it is a common term, it's going to be used. You're going to have to get over that, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the best way to think about it is not to apply it to a particular kind of game or even a particular kind of gamer, but rather it is a way of playing games, okay? Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is, let's take Minesweeper, okay? This is a game, first of all, you know, a lot of people would say I'm a very hardcore gamer in terms of the amount of games I play, how long I've been playing them, you know, how much I know about games and how they're made and, you know, what, you know, all this trivia,
like,
blah, 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 blah. Let's say this, I'm an experienced gamer and I'm quite an avid gamer and I play a lot of different kinds of games. Minesweeper, most people would consider to be a very casual game. I mean, it's included with every copy of Windows, which means there are hundreds of millions of copies of it around the world. It's been around for a really long time. You can pick it up and play it in 2 minutes and be done with it, whatever. My mom knows how to play Minesweeper. But in middle school, I played Minesweeper in a very hardcore fashion. Mm-hmm. In terms of, I was playing it for 2 hours at a time, staring intently at the screen. I could beat Expert 75% of the time, you know.
Sweeper's Anonymous.
And I had a very hardcore protocol about the way that I went through. I had a strategy, and I was good at it. You know, I beat the game as fast as possible, and I was just very meticulous about it. And some people are that way about Sudoku. right? Mm-hmm. And they kick ass at Sudoku, and they take it really fucking seriously. But I think hardcore is more of a way to describe the way people play games. You can play a game in a very casual way or a very hardcore way, and good games allow both. And that's why I recommend something like Boom Blocks to everyone, no matter how much, you know, if they own a Wii, I tell them this is a game you should buy. And it doesn't matter if their favorite game is Rayman Raving Rabbids or if their favorite game is Metroid Prime 3. I think they're going to find some, I think that game is big enough that there are so many ways to play it that everybody's going to enjoy it. And I think the problem, the reason that people get upset over maybe the new direction of Nintendo's development or the, you know, this perceived motion of the, or the splitting of the market, so, you know, PS3 and Xbox games are all really hardcore and Wii games are all really casual. I think the thing that bothers people about this perceived schism is that in the old days, a lot of games could be played across the spectrum. You know, especially in Nintendo games, something like Super Mario Brothers is innately able to be played in a very casual way. I mean, I know people who can barely get past the first level, but they've been playing that game for 20 years, you know, on occasion. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't care. It's fun to them. It doesn't matter if they can get very far into it.
Well,
and then there are people who do speed runs through the entire game in less than 10 minutes.
I mean, I guess what
it
really
just depends.
I think
what really bothers me is the fact that it seems like the market is now saying, I mean, in a way, all of
this game is hardcore.
Exactly. This game is hardcore. Yeah. This game is this. This game is that. And that's just crap.
They're trying to define themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, they're applying really labels to themselves. It's very unhealthy. It's like it's like a high school kid saying, "I'm goth."
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what you call yourself. You know, maybe you're goth, but you carry teddy bears around.
Then you're gonna get your ass beat. What's
whatever.
Your
and you play, and you start on the football team.
That
you can be all of those things. It doesn't matter what you call yourself. And once you start labeling yourself, that's when you start really limiting your possibilities, right?
I
that's
think
when you start building
this, being on
this box around yourself that you can't get out of because you have this preconceived notion of, you know, this is the definition of me. And the same goes for games. I mean, when you create a game and you say, this is a hardcore simulation racing game, I'm no longer interested because you've already put so many limitations on what that game can be that it's probably not going to be fun to me. I like things that are genre bending. I like things that go across the spectrum of casual and hardcore, that there are many, many different ways to play it.
Yeah.
Those are the more interesting games to me. Those are the more innovative games.
But, you know,
and Nintendo has a history of making that kind of game, you know? And some people are worried that they're painting themselves into a corner now, and I think that's a legitimate concern because they're kind of in some ways they're starting to define themselves as we make casual games and we also sometimes make hardcore games, and by splitting them up and applying those definitions to them, they're really doing themselves a disservice. They should be making things like Mario Kart Wii that can totally go both ways, right?
Well, it screws you over both ways if that's what you're talking about.
That's my diatribe.
Go on, Jay.
I was gonna say, I think the danger in defining one particular genre as hardcore or another is that
You get genres so much.
Well,
it's hardcore.
Yeah,
you might have like a sub.
Yeah, you do.
First-person shooters.
Yeah,
yes,
but I think it's more that the idea is.
But
I think the idea is that the genre is dominated by games.
Well, fine,
that
I think the genre itself. They discount other genres that maybe don't, right on their surface, seem as technically oriented, but there are basically entries in every genre.
The thing is, there's multiple strands I mean, people use it the term because it's sort of shorthand in a lot of ways, but the problem with it is that it's shorthand for different things in different contexts. Sometimes it's the techno supremacy thing. Sometimes it's inaccessibility, that you need to have played various other games that are similar to really get into it very quickly. Otherwise, it might be very difficult. So you need to be someone that's poured in a lot of time to these games.
At the very least, there's a steep learning curve.
So there's inaccessibility, there's techno supremacy,
roguelikes,
and then
like
there's some sort of like, you know, connection with like, you know, mature themes as well that goes on. You know, this kind of thing crops up with the whole Nintendo thing. You know, that the hardcore gamers are the ones that have to have blood and death and shooting and what, and then, you know, somehow Nintendo gamers that play, you know, however many hours a week are not hardcore because they don't need to have death. I mean, I don't really see what got that has to do with how much of a hardcore gamer you are. It's more about your tastes in gaming. But that these sort of three things that most commonly get bundled up, and to some extent there's overlap. I mean, the first person shooter thing, very often they are the most technically advanced. They have mature themes, and they're not necessarily very accessible. But in different contexts, those things are kind of decoupled. So it doesn't really mean a whole lot. It's very often it's very it's only useful in the specific context it's being used. So whereas a definition has to apply across all contexts. And so for us to actually answer the question,
I think it's not really a very useful term in any situation.
You know, it's interesting.
Very, very few.
Because on the forums, we actually got into an argument about how would you classify like shoot 'em ups.
In fact, linked to a post that you made, John, in one of those threads I think you should go read right now.
Yeah, and I said that, if I remember correctly, somebody said that, shoot-em-ups, they aren't really hardcore. And I said, just because they have arcade origins and, they're very simple, and they're pretty much pick-up-and-play. And my response to that was, well...
Pick-up-and-play for 2 seconds?
Well, that's the whole thing. My response to it was that... honestly, I can't see any grandma picking up a shoot 'em up like anything, like Gradius 3.
What's this game with all these big muscular men in thongs shooting?
To me, that kind of falls under one of those criteria. Like a lot of those shoot 'em ups, I guess that when they started out, they were very simple, but they have kind of evolved into a more hardcore genre simply because they, as the genre evolved, people kind of learned along with it. And became better and better, so they had to become more and more complicated, so therefore they have become more hardcore, and more, like Greg said, they have become more inaccessible.
So,
right. I think a good example of that would also be strategy games, where if I go back and play old strategy games I used to play when I was younger, I find them to be really, really easy to play. Mm-hmm. Like the game is now very, very easy, whereas if I go play games now, it feels like they're much more challenging, and I realize that they've had to increase the learning curve on those games because there's almost a culture of, quote, hardcoreness that's grown around them that expects these games to be very difficult.
Yep.
They're just selling games to the same people.
Right. Yeah. And that's almost the danger of becoming. If you have never played a strategy game before and you tried to jump into a modern Total War game, you would have no fun. Mm-hmm. Because it's so complicated that you would just feel like this game isn't a game. It's like managing a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. And again, I say that's because those developers have basically applied these very strict labels to their own games. They're saying, look, we're making this game for hardcore strategy fans, people who have already played this series before, people who know the ins and outs of it. That's our design doc, right? I mean, they're putting so many limitations on themselves that the game becomes more insular, more inbred almost.
Yeah. As somebody who's a fan of that genre, I love those games, but I know for a fact that trying to get someone else to play them, he was pulling his hair out because it wasn't fun. I mean, he almost threatened to not call it a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a commercial strategy. In the end, also, that sometimes if that's your market, that's what you go for. You can make money from appealing to that market and the same people every so often. Then there's some people make their money that way. I mean, it's not unique to games, and there are certain films that
are a marketing ploy.
Yeah,
Jerry Wexler invented the term R&B back in the early 50s because that they saw that as a way to market their new artist to consumers who'd never heard of these people before, but they said, well, I like R&B, so I'll buy this.
Yeah,
even
between genre and branding, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. Genres basically are brands. I mean, they are cooked up by the producers of this content. And I think as consumers, we should resist that. And as reviewers, as critics also, we should resist that and say, I don't care what the fuck you call it. It's a game.
Well, I think a great example
and
is
I'm going to look at it as a game.
A famous
and I'm
example
try to
of
ignore all this
hardcoreism, but
crap
the same
you
thing is the phrase communication game. That fucking phrase. They said it more times than for those who don't know about Animal Crossing. They said it more times trying to describe that game to Western audiences. This is a quote communication game. Mm-hmm. than they said used than the word innovation is used at a Wii E3 press conference. I mean, it was every time our new communication game, Animal Crossing, lets you communicate with family and friends. I live with my family. I could tell them things I want to tell them. I don't need to spend 20 minutes writing them a letter with the GameCube controller.
Right.
And I think I think it was almost a reverse of this game isn't hardcore. Your whole family can play it, so we have to call it something that doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
So communication.
That's how they marketed that game. It doesn't actually mean anything. So what I'm saying is to listeners, don't get caught up in that crap.
Yeah,
you know? Stop caring. Just treat it like a game. Just treat it for what it is.
There's more significance conferred upon it than it deserves, because, like I said, it's usually it means different things in different contexts. People use it as a sort of shorthand to describe a bunch of other stuff that's just bundled together that might not even necessarily go together in that particular context. What I would say is that, to be fair, there's nothing wrong with a game knowing its audience and cynically appealing to its audience. And it's a perfectly legitimate form of entertainment if it's not going to be all things
to everybody.
It's
called fan service. I mean,
it's
not hardcore though.
If you're one of the people in that subset that sort of enjoys this sort of level, the sort of level of sophistication that you can get, where you haven't got to worry about new entrants, then there's something good about that. You know, if you're, for whatever reason, you've fallen in playing certain kinds of games more than others, that's something that you can get from that particular genre that you can't from others necessarily, that you get this sort of high level, this feeling that you're kind of a sort of something that spans individual games, and that you're actually sort of improving a particular kind of game over like a lifetime or something. You know, it's a different kind of entertainment. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing innately inferior to other kinds, but it is by its nature very exclusive. So we're moving on.
Agreed.
I guess we're moving on. There's one more line. Keep rocking, ripping on each other, and the games that deserve it. Okay.
Fine.
That's actually from the last letter. You're jumping the gun.
Nice!
Mother Superior jumped the gun. All right. No, the last letter is from Kevin in Toledo. Kevin writes, "Hey guys, love the show. Here's hoping it's more than just a listener mail to read."
Oops.
Okay. "There are a few games I'm really looking forward to and was wondering what you have heard. The Conduit, Mad World, No More Heroes 2, and Ghostbusters. Keep rocking, ripping on each other, and the games that
deserve
it."
Done already.
I can answer this question very quickly.
More ways than one.
The Conduit, hardcore. Mad World, casual. No More Heroes 2, hardcore. And Ghostbusters, casual.
And Ghostbusters not coming.
Done. Good night, everybody.
Yep.
It is. Who's publishing Ghostbusters? Is it Atari?
I think it's Atari now. It was
that game.
Vivendi,
that game has had the worst
merger with Activision, and they released it to be whatever. That's right.
We talked a lot about the Conduit already. It's kind of promising. You hope it's good. I guess the one thing I'm concerned about, we kind of touched, is just this idea that it's an exercise in box ticking. That it's like, right, so there's a gap in the market for this particular kind of game, and therefore we'll tick the boxes that suggest that it is this kind of game. So, you know, dovetailing with what we just talked about, you know, it's very explicitly trying to portray itself as a quote-unquote hardcore game that there's supposedly this vacuum.
And that's definitely good business.
Yeah, and that I think
what do people want,
said,
or what do people need, and you fulfill that need. I think the reason that it gives us pause is because we think of games as art, and that is not the way that
you just wonder whether the problem
that you
is that
envision art is by thinking, well, what's
right,
not
and,
out
and there's always been something deeply going through the motions about this game ever since it was
announced. You just wonder whether there's substance beneath
it just
it,
feels
it, it's
like,
really
like there's something going on here that's not so much like I'm developing this game because this is my vision.
You wonder if there's really any inspiration there on a creative level. And that remains to be seen, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Of course,
it looks a little bit like a national treasure with guns. I'm going to be honest.
It may very well be. As far as Mad World, I'm very excited about it because of the guys who are making it. And I think the concept is very cool. It seems like a cartoon version of Running Man, which sounds awesome to me. I'm a little worried about the Wii controls. I'm afraid they could definitely go a little too waggle heavy on it. The graphics are fantastic. I'm definitely in love with the graphical style. So we'll just have to see. We still don't know that much
about
it.
See, I think Mad World is also a little bit doing this too, though. I mean, we just with the look, here's a lot of blood.
Yes, look, we thank God we made a mature rated title for
look,
Wii.
Look, blood
it's like, you
everywhere.
Know, that shouldn't
blood
be
on your
Wii.
First
blood, consideration.
Blood, blood. And it's like, God damn, guys. I mean, the whole graphics engine almost seems like it was built to emphasize, look at all this blood we can do.
Yeah, well, well right. To be fair, on their various Platinum Games new projects are not often much more than very crass. And you would see the Bayonetta trailer would agree with that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's a total ripoff of, you know, Devil May Cry.
Oh, yeah.
And a bunch of other stuff. Ninja Gaiden. Mm-hmm. So... Okay, No More Heroes 2. I think we've actually talked about that.
Yeah, it's a 2010 game, isn't it?
Yeah, early 2010.
It is a 2010.
I think is what the
yeah. I think if they polish No More Heroes, which if they're going to wait 2 years in this game, they'll have to be doing some sort of polish to it. I think they could turn this into a good, maybe even a must-have game. But once again, it does.
Yeah, I really like the first one, so I'm pretty excited to see what they do with it. But I am kind of hoping it's not just the same old song.
Well, the graphics engine needs to be fixed,
they go
and the gameplay needs to be expanded. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
The only things we've kind of heard so far is apparently, you know, they want to make the sort of overworld kind of stuff more integrated, and
which is exactly
what
I said when I talked about the game, and Johnny was like, "No, it doesn't need to be more integrated. It's fine like it is."
Well, maybe they're wrong.
I definitely never said it's fine the way it is. I think probably
you could
what
just
I said
strip
was
it
I prefer
out.
It didn't.
Yeah.
I prefer it didn't have an open world because it doesn't work.
Yeah, but
so
maybe if they did
you
it right,
just go from mission to mission.
But there's that. There's supposedly it's going to be moderately more serious in tone. And
yeah.
Apparently, Suda
could,
will not
they,
be.
It could definitely stand for that.
Suda will not actually be directing it personally. Apparently, he's going to.
He's
be,
actually found
he's
someone.
He's
going to
be the
vision.
Sort of executive director. He's still going to be writing it and doing a lot of the broad creative stuff, but he's not so much going to be doing the day-to-day development.
He's busy on Michigan too.
Yeah.
Well,
no, he's
Mickey
with Mikami and
yeah, I know.
And Project S presumably still festering somewhere.
Project X is
well, yeah,
weird.
I mean, we heard pretty recently someone asked him about the Project S, which is a thing he's supposedly working on with Hideo Kojima from Metal Gear Solid, and he said that it's basically just an idea they have. They talk about it every time they see each other, but they haven't actually started working on it, and they don't know when they're going to because they're too busy right now. So don't look forward to that anytime soon.
Now, if it is going to happen, though, Project S is probably going to happen in the near future because Kojima's plate has become somewhat less full in the last few months.
You don't know that. He could be working on Zone
well,
of the Enders
no,
3.
Look,
like,
look,
we don't
if
know
he
what he's
doesn't
doing.
Have a Metal Gear Solid game on his plate is less full than it was a few months ago.
Well, less full doesn't mean it's not full in an absolute
sense. That's what I said. I said
Police
less
Knots
full.
Police Knots sequel, anybody? Police Knots? Come on. Give me a break.
we don't really know what either of them are working on right now.
Right.
So, yeah. And as far as Ghostbusters, I don't know a lot about it, but I think it depends very heavily on kind of an Elebits mechanism where you're kind of using some kind of grappling beam to move things around environment, and that's across platforms. So it seems like the Wii version should be very well attuned to that kind of mechanic.
I hope,
but I don't know if it's actually fun.
You know, just to kind of follow up on the Ghostbusters, with Nintendo re-releasing GameCube games for the Wii, Luigi's Mansion needs to be in that list of games they re-release for the Wii because that would be phenomenal.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if Ghostbusters...
That's
I still
a good
think
template.
Well, I guess the two aren't mutually exclusive when you look at Pikmin, but it'd be nice if they did a sequel where it was like Resident Evil 4 camera angle, because then the pointer stuff would work well. Sort of behind the shoulder, Luigi's Mansion.
Right.
Rather than that sort of almost pseudo-2D thing that kind of went on with it, you know, with that, like...
You know what? I still think that game, in retrospect, does more graphical effects and things than a lot of Wii games do.
It does. Luigi's Mansion has really.
It is a beautiful
nice.
Game.
Well,
wait,
but you've got to consider
really
the
nice.
Intent. I mean, Luigi's Mansion was showing off the things the GameCube could do. Obviously,
right.
You had dual analog, and you had like the didn't it use the shoulder buttons in some way. Like,
yeah, it did. It used the shoulder buttons.
And then of course,
bizarre.
Just the graphics.
Analog
so whereas most Wii games have very little ambition to show off what the Wii can do, because that's not what Wii's about.
Yeah, I know, but still, it should, in my personal opinion, it should still be trying, making an active effort. Which
I don't think anybody would argue.
EA apparently would with Call of Duty World at War.
Oh, okay.
Zing!
Here we go.
All right, Well, I think we need to wrap up the show. Just want to say thank you to everyone who's written in. This is only a mere sampling of the letters we've received.
A smattering of mail.
We have quite a few more to go. So in future episodes, we'll be catching up on all those other ones, and we hope that the backlog just keeps getting bigger and bigger. We love getting these questions. We had some great ones today. So please send your questions, comments on the show, suggested feature topics, anything like that, to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and remember to include your name or something we can call you, and your location would be nice as well. We had a lot of locations today, which was pretty cool. And I think that's all we've got. So thanks to the crew for being here, and we will see you next time, whatever that may be.
Later.
Later.
So long.
If everyone is recording,
yes, and well, don't forget,
John.
We'll do the recording.
I'm recording.
Jesus Christ! John is on fire today, and by fire I mean there's burning.
I am blazing.
You make my eyes
worst podcast ever already.